Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here with us on another Sunday morning. Rick Moore here with you. I wanted to talk about an important topic, always important, but we only have Sunday mornings here on WPVC, sexual assault. So we brought in a local expert, Sherry Owen here from the Sexual Assault Resource Agency, the Community Outreach Director. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. Coming in. Not everybody has an hour to give on a Sunday morning.
Oh, but this is a very important topic. I agree with you.
The Me Too movement is what made me say, time to talk about this again. But there's certainly so many things to talk about. What SARA, Sexual Assault Resource Agency, does, and what happens down in the Charlottesville office, SARA. Seville.org. You can look on the website. We want to give the hotline out. I'm sure there's a lot of people wondering how to reach out. 434-977-7273. That's 977-7273. So write that down. We'll give that throughout the hour. SarahSeville.org. A lot of things to show and discuss during the hour. Over at SARA, I guess my first question is, how large has SARA grown since its startup?
That's a great question. So just a little bit of history. SARA has been around over 40 years. And if you can imagine a group of individuals around a kitchen table over 40 years ago, really sitting there talking about how you could give services to women who were assaulted who were abused. So what type of services to have. So basically, it was a real grassroots efforts, and that's how SARA started. And over the years, obviously, the agency has grown. Currently, we've got 13 staff members. So we've got full-time therapists on staff. We have an adult advocate, a child advocate. We've got prevention educators. We've got a crisis services coordinator, outreach advocate. Obviously, I'm the clinical the outreach director. We have a clinical director, an executive director. So we've got 13 staff members at SARA right now. Now, all 13 of us are also, we take calls. So you talked about the hotline. We have a 24-hour hotline that we staff, but we are also on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to accompany survivors to the emergency room if they need support or when they need support. We've got emergency room advocates that help us on the weekend. So, SARA, the agency has grown. Our services have grown, and I think the awareness of the topic has also just grown exponentially.
And so we'll get into a little more detail about what all these support services are, and you mentioned prevention and how some of these things work as well. Has this grown at SARA, at the Sexual Assault Resource Agency? Has this grown out of need, out of capability because of larger staff, or out of discovery that more people are needy for the help?
So if you look at the structure of SARA as far as our funding, we're about 65% funded by grants, federal and state and local grants. And so all of our positions have some grant funding to it. So when the victims of the Crime Act a couple of years ago had a significant amount of more money available to agencies like ours, we were able to increase our staff and add positions. And so a lot of what we do is dependent upon our grant funding. So we were able to add our outreach advocate. We were able to, our prevention funding allowed us to add another full-time prevention educator, which was wonderful because we are able to serve so many more schools right now with our prevention staff. So the need was there. We looked and did a community assessment to see where the need was, and then we were able to add staff that we got approved through our grant funding.
So if it's the grant funding, is this that there's just more money coming from the government? Is the government the organization saying we have more money to give, or that the government saying that there's more people that we need to serve?
I think the government, I think the money was available because they realized that there were needs out there and that people needed the resources. And I don't know that it's always going to be that way, but we took advantage of that opportunity when it arose.
Again, our guest today, Sherry Owen, she's the community outreach director with Charlottesville's Sexual Assault Resource Agency. We're going to talk about what they do. We're going to also talk about the Me Too movement. Sherry, I'm curious. Let's talk a bit about one or two of the support services. I think people are regularly surprised. Folks who just don't pay that much attention, who haven't had a need, at least closely, maybe not personally or right next to them in terms of family or friend. The stereotype is always female. To discover that Sarah also helps men. Can you tell us a bit about who the support services are there for? And I don't want you to focus on men, but tell us that it's inclusive.
It is very inclusive. We support men, women, and children. We've got clients of all ages. We have men, we have women, we have children. We serve. Our services are also available to friends and family members. So if you have somebody who is a survivor, it's not just them. It's also to help their friends and their family in order to cope with the situation and talk about things that they can do. Talk about, we talk to them about what it means to be trauma-informed and what it means to be available and how to do that and to support the survivor. So all of our support services are provided free of charge. We have survivors of every age, race, gender, identity, and sexual orientation. All are welcome at SARA. And we also work very closely with IRC in case we've got survivors that are come in that need some type of translation dependent upon what ethnicity they are.
I did read that one of your support services is therapy, and it lists English and Spanish. Mm-hmm. And a question that popped into my head was, do you have need for other languages because of the International Rescue Committee being in town?
Absolutely, we do. We work very closely with IRC. We've had clients who speak Farsi. We have clients that speak all different languages. And so we work with the translator in therapy if needed. We have our adult advocate is bilingual, and she is Spanish-speaking, and so we work very closely with the Spanish-speaking population, but we don't have any issues getting a translator. We've also got translators that are deaf and hard of hearing if we have a survivor that comes in that may be deaf and hard of hearing. So we do have wonderful community partners that we work with that are available for us whatever need arises.
So you don't have a need for volunteers for...
I didn't say that.
Sorry, I misunderstood the statement then.
No. I said that we work very closely with our community partners when we're looking for language translation. But we are always looking for volunteers as a nonprofit. Any nonprofit's always looking for volunteers to help us because we are small. I mean, even though we have 12, 13 people on staff, we're still a small agency. We go and do outreach events all the time. As a matter of fact, this summer, we're one of the nonprofit charities that will work the Fridays after 5. And, you know, they split the proceeds up between the number of charities that they have for the summer. So when you're doing checking IDs and you need 8 or 10 people, our staff just can't do that. So we need volunteers. And we've been so fortunate to have volunteers in the community that want to come and volunteer their time and help us. So when we do outreach and tabling events, we're always looking for volunteers. When we need help in the office, maybe we're doing a big mailing or something and we need help in the office, it's wonderful to have volunteers come help us. So we're always looking for volunteers, especially for the hotline, because we staff the hotline 24 hours a day. So we're getting ready to start a hotline class in the next month or so. So we're always looking for volunteers to come and to give of their time with something that they'd like to do.
Again, Sherry Owen here from Charlottesville Sexual Assault Resource Agency. This is a Sunday morning wake-up call here on WPVC. Sherry, let's talk about the hotline for a moment. Again, if you want to write it down, this is Sarah. We are talking about sexual assault. 977-7273 is the hotline. Can you give me some statistics? And I know that statistics always have their issues, but I'm curious about local statistics. And we can get a little bit about national, too. But I'm sure there's always numbers out there. Can you
always
share numbers. Some?
Sure. So I'm going to step back a second and talk a little bit about the fact that our office is in Charlottesville. Actually, we're off of 29 North on Greenbrier Drive. So actually, it's in Albemarle County. But our service area, our response area, is Albemarle and Charlottesville. We work very closely with University of Virginia. But we also work with Fluvanna, Nelson, Louisa, and Green. So we are the Rape Crisis Center that responds to those areas. That's not to say that if we've got somebody who goes to the University of Virginia Hospital from a locality outside of the ones that I just mentioned, we absolutely are going to go to UVA and support that survivor. We will work with them and give them resources in their area with their crisis center. But UVA is kind of the catalyst, because that's where the forensic program is, the forensic nursing program, the SANE program, the sexual assault nurse examiner, forensic nurse examiner is at UVA. So when the survivors get transported to UVA, they don't have to just be in that response area. So I want to make that clear. We will work with anyone. But our hotline, we get calls, for instance, our last fiscal year, FY17, we had 187 hotline calls. Those were not just hang-ups and not just inappropriate calls. Those were actual phone calls where a staff was able to talk with somebody and give them resources and information that they wanted. When we don't have a volunteer to staff the hotline, then we forward it to the state. So we sort of work with the Virginia, the Action Alliance, and they're sort of our umbrella agency at the state. And we forward it to their hotline because they have an 800 hotline. They answered 392 calls for us that were legitimate hotline calls over the course of FY17. So our hotline gets a lot of use, and a lot, it's a wonderful, wonderful resource.
So that's over
500 phone
calls. Over 550 phone calls.
It is, in the course of a year. Those are not just survivors. Those are also friends. Those are family members. Those are people, administrators. A lot of people use our hotline just to ask us questions. I've heard this, or I'm asking this, or I have a friend that came and disclosed to me, or I had a family member that disclosed to me, or I'd like to know, can you tell me the process of this? What's the process of going to the emergency room? Tell me what happens. How do I make a police report? You know, how do I do this? How do I do that? So it's a wealth of information. So it's not just a survivor who calls. It's anybody who wants to find out information about something. So we don't give advice, but we do have a lot of resources available. It could be somebody saying, I'm in this state, or I'm in this locality. Can you tell me what the phone number is for my area? Because when you type sexual, we come up when you're Googling. So we're one of the first ones that come right up. So a lot of people call us to get information, and we are gladly able to give it to them.
You said, again, we are talking with Sherry Owen, Community Outreach Director for SARA, Sexual Assault Resource Agency, that you mentioned UVA.
Mm-hmm.
UVA students as well.
Mm-hmm.
UVA, University of Virginia, doesn't have its own system for dealing with students who call and are assaulted?
They do, but we work very closely with them. Sometimes the students call us because we are confidential. Our services are free. We're also not a mandated reporter. And so UVA, when you report as a mandated reporter, there are a lot of people that want to report anonymously, or report and talk to somebody and not report to the police. So we work very closely with the police department at UVA. We work very closely with the Title IX office at UVA. One of my responsibilities is to oversee the SART team, the Sexual Assault Response Team. So every locality has a Commonwealth's attorney. Every Commonwealth's attorney, by law, is required to activate what's called a SART team in the locality. And so on the SART team, you've got the Commonwealth's attorney, you've got victim witness, you've got law enforcement, you've got the advocate, the Rape Crisis Center, and you've got the forensic nurse. And that group sits and talks about how you make policies and procedures easier for the survivor, and so that the survivor benefits. And so it's not talking to this person and then talking to this person and then talking to this person, thus re-traumatizing themselves every single time they have to go through everything. So the SART team works very closely together with everybody that I just mentioned. And UVA doesn't have a Commonwealth's attorney. They share Albemarle's and Charlottesville. So the Albemarle and the Charlottesville and the UVA, we all meet together monthly to talk about things that to make streamline the efforts, to make things easier for survivors. And it's a wonderful process. We're training everybody to be trauma-informed, what it means to be trauma-informed, how to work with the survivor, how to talk with the survivor. It's just been a wonderful situation.
30 seconds left before our upcoming break. Any change that you've made at the last meeting?
At the last SART meeting?
Yeah. Or a recent meeting?
You know, our change has been the fact that we now work together individually, and that we don't the police department doesn't just have their investigation, and Title IX UVA doesn't have their investigation, and victim witness doesn't. We work now very closely, and we talk to each other, and we ask questions. And so instead of this person doing their investigation and this over here, and then let's see what happens, we now do it together and work together and talk together, and that's huge.
How long did it take to get to that point?
About a year.
Okay. All right, so we'll take a break. We'll be right back. I want to get to the Me Too movement. All right, Sherry Owen with us from Sarah. All right, back in action here on Sunday morning with Sherry Owen. Hopefully everybody out there is paying attention and writing down anything, whether you're a survivor. And Sherry, what is the title of someone who is still in the process, still being abused? I use the word survivor, and I've heard you use that, but someone who is yet to go to Sarah.
So a lot of people call, you can call them victims, you can call them survivors. We tend to call everybody a survivor because they have survived, and
it's
seems
more upbeat.
It is. It's much more positive than victim.
More powerful.
It is. It is an empowering because, you know, you did survive. You're here to talk about it, and you're sitting in front of me. You survive, so you are a survivor. So again, it is more empowering. But a lot of times, people still have the label victim because they still are a victim.
Because I want to give out the phone number again, the hotline to anyone who's listening, the neighbor, the family member, the survivor,
the employer,
the employee, someone at school, the friend who feels like they're worried or concerned or for the person that they have thoughts about, it's 434-977-7273.
Someone will always answer that. There will always be a warm voice on the other end of that phone number, and it is completely anonymous.
And I guess it doesn't matter what word I use, whether I use the word survivor or victim or whatever, just call the number or pass it on.
It's amazing to me. I've been at Sarah for about 3 years, but have worked with survivors and empowering women for over 10, 15 years. And the number of people that, when I answer the hotline, that have said and disclosed to me, this is, you know, it took me so long to pick this up. I would look at it and I would say, I'm going to call, and I'd pick it up and I'd put it down, and I'd pick it up and I'd put it down. Or you'd say Sarah hotline and I'd hang up because I just wasn't ready. Not everybody is ready at the same time to call the hotline. But if I can implore upon anybody, it's all completely anonymous. And all you have to do, if you have any questions at all, call the hotline and someone can answer your questions and just give you information. Do you know information and knowledge is power? And that's what happens because survivors get their power stripped away from them. You know, so when you give people information and you give them knowledge, that's powerful. And that just helps, you know, very small steps in regaining some self-confidence.
And you're, you know, people who are listening to the show are hearing this, and so you're listening during this hour. But the show is also being recorded and out there on the podcast, SeaVillePodcast.com. Well, the information is still accurate, and so if you're hearing it on the computer, you can still pass on the information, and it's still valuable to those that you give it to days, weeks, months later. So take advantage of it and make those folks that you have thoughts and concerns about empowered with the information, the phone number. Again, 434-977-7273 for the hotline, for yourself, for your family members, sarahseville.org, whether you're trying to help people, whether you want to be a volunteer, you can go there and learn more. So, Sherry, I want to talk about the Me Too movement, hashtag Me Too.
Okay.
It was interesting. You caught me off guard a bit when we were talking about the show. You said the pros and cons.
Right.
Everyone, again, I'm a male. I'm with my sometimes oblivious thoughts on life. Cons? What? Cons?
Yes, there are cons. So the hashtag MeToo movement since October of 2017 really has just exploded as far as making people just aware of sexual assault and sexual harassment in the workplace. We do a sexual harassment in the workplace in service for any businesses that would like to come and have this in service, whether you've had a problem, whether you just want to do it because you think it's the right thing to do. We've gotten just a lot of phone calls about that. But so that's been really positive because it's brought the subject to light. You know, a subject that is really uncomfortable to talk about, now people are talking about it. But it also, when you talk about, when you talk to survivors, it also is very stressful because what it's done is it's resurfaced the pain of their abuse. So it's triggering. All right. So as positive as it has been, it also has negative consequences for people who have been survivors of sexual assault or survivors of some type of abuse. Because in the hashtag MeToo movement, if you remember when it caught on in October after some of the big Hollywood stars.
Yeah, I think Alyssa Milano
and Harvey Weinstein, all
right.
of that. And so what they wanted to do is they wanted to do hashtag me too, which would mean I was too, right? So what we were hearing from survivors was that it was almost like they felt like they needed to do it or feeling pressure to do it because everybody else was doing it. But yet they weren't ready to do it yet.
Right. If I don't do it, that means I wasn't abused.
Right. Or why is everybody doing it? It's just taking it on. You know, everybody's doing it. And you know, the peer pressure and the stress. But I'm not ready to do it. And so it's okay. And, you know, we're telling them, you know, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. This is just social media. You know that what happened to you, you have to deal with it when it, in the way that's most appropriate and comfortable for you. So not everybody was comfortable doing hashtag me too, because they weren't ready yet. A lot of people, it's not everybody says, oh, okay, I'm a survivor and now it's a month later and I'm ready to do this. And 2 months later, I'm ready to do this. And 3 months later, I'm ready to do this. We see clients who were abused 10, 15 years ago, and it's just taken that long for them to be ready to deal with it. So as positive as this whole movement has been, and it's just made this awareness amazing, it also has been negative for some people.
Interesting. Thank you for making me aware of
that. Well, thank you for asking, because this is the type of conversation that we need to have. Everybody needs to have this conversation. You know, when I do this sexual harassment in the workplace in services, you know, we talk about what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. You know, we define joking and we define flirting and we define the fact that, you know, if it's two people are consenting joking and two people are consenting flirting, then it's fine. But if it's only one-sided, then it's not fine. And, you know, the joke that you would tell at the workplace cooler, you think all we're telling people is just think before you say something, because you don't know who might be listening and who you might offend. And that's what the hashtag MeToo movement has done. It's made people stop and think, and that's good.
So has this led to more women running for office, though? What are some of the pros for the Me Too movement?
It has, interestingly enough, others, it has encouraged people to feel less alone. It has encouraged people to feel like they have support. It's encouraged people to address past trauma, talking with loved ones, talking with people. It's really brought the idea of sexual harassment and sexual assault into everybody's consciousness. You know, so it's not just something that has been an uncomfortable topic for people to talk about. But it has made people feel more empowered. It's made women feel more empowered because they feel like they've got so much support, which I think is what's led to more women running for office. Now, I'm apolitical. I don't want to get into a political conversation, but I think that people feel more empowered, and this movement has made women feel more empowered and feel more supportive. And that's just my take on it.
What is the difference? Well, that's probably not the best way to phrase that. So let me find my notes. Talk about sexual abuse versus sexual harassment.
Well, sexual abuse is when you define rape and sexual assault, sexual abuse, it's the act of the actual act of rape. Where sexual harassment is unwanted advances, and it can be quid pro quo. It can be, which is where you've got an employer saying, if you do this for me, I'm going to help elevate you in the company. That's basically quid pro quo. Or it's just unwanted sexual advances where it's power. And that's the thing, the difference between sexual harassment and sexual assault is that sexual harassment is a power ploy over somebody trying to have power over somebody.
Did SARA, the Sexual Assault Resource Agency, used to just be one and has now become focused on both?
Define both.
Did Sexual Assault Resource Agency used to just focus on sexual assault and is now supporting and preventing and training both sexual assault and sexual harassment?
So, interestingly enough, let's talk a second. So, a lot of people confuse SARA with the Shelter for Help and Emergency. The Shelter for Help and Emergency works with domestic violence victims, whereas SARA works with sexual assault survivors, okay? And the difference is that we don't house our clients. So they've got a shelter where they will house clients of domestic abuse, women and children, and they do work with men for a number of weeks, helping them out. Okay. So we're a standalone agency. They're a standalone agency. When you look at SARA, you can kind of break us down into three different parts. We've got the direct services, which we talked a little bit about at the top of the show, where we have therapists and advocates on staff that work with clients who come in and have appointments with us. We work with survivors, and we have three therapists on staff. We have our prevention team, which goes into schools and talks about prevention. So the important thing about this is, you know, we're not just reacting. We are trying to be proactive. So we're trying to go and talk to these middle school and high schoolers about prevention and about how to be a responsible person, a responsible individual. Defining consent, defining how to be a good bystander, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, trying to get ahead of it so it doesn't happen. All right, so we're trying to prevent it. When you look at sexual harassment could lead to sexual abuse. And so when you're talking about that, it's not us training on sexual harassment and then, you know, all training on sexual assault, it sort of is all one topic because one can lead to the other. And I think that's what's important. And I think because of this hashtag MeToo movement, that I think corporations and businesses are realizing that they need to have their in-service and talk about this because it is very important. We've had so many businesses in the area send us their updated sexual harassment policy and say, is this good? You know, are we missing anything? Can you come in and give us our in-service to our employees? We absolutely would love to do that. And we'd love to come in and talk about Sarah services and talk about sexual harassment in the workplace and talk about what a healthy workplace environment is. And that's how we start the in-service. So I think it goes hand in hand. It's not that we're separately now doing something because of this. I think we've always done it. We're just refining it.
Again, Sherry Owen here from Sexual Assault Resource Agency. She is the Community Outreach Director. We are talking about Sarah. We're also talking about the Me Too movement. So I saw where Southern Baptists have had a recent get-together and are discussing what to do in their organization because of past history. Any thoughts and comments on that?
I think my thought and comment, being raised, I was raised Baptist, is that I applaud anything that this movement is doing to make people sit back and think and look at the structure that they've been working by and seeing what needs to change. And I think that that's very positive. I don't know what's going to happen with that, but my comment is yay for them to be able to sit back and have a conversation about what they should be doing or what they should change. So I appreciate that. And I appreciate that that has happened in so many different circles because of this hashtag MeToo movement. You know, I was amazed to read some statistics, but the U.S. Crisis Hotline, RAIN. Are you familiar with RAIN?
I'm not.
Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. So RAIN, we get wonderful statistics, R-A-I-N-N, RAIN.com. If you have the opportunity to Google RAIN and just read some of their national statistics, and they break them down by state, and it's really a wonderful resource. But from October to December of 2017, so when hashtag MeToo kind of got rolling in October of 2017 to December, October, November, December. So that's a quarter. And all of us do our grant reports and we look things in a quarter. Their hotline calls were up 23% compared to the previous year. That's huge. And so what that tells me is that people are feeling more comfortable. People are feeling like it's acceptable to be able to call, that it's not a stigma. That, you know, because there used to be such a stigma attached to rape and sexual assault, and people felt, survivors, you'll even hear survivors talk about how, you know, I was scared to call, I didn't want to call, I felt like it was my fault, no one would believe me, no one would listen to me, all of that. And that has changed. That has changed. This hashtag MeToo movement has changed all of that because people feel empowered and supported.
Did the state of Virginia make any changes during the recent legislation in regards to sexual assault, sexual harassment?
I know that we've worked very closely with Delegate Fillercorn and Senator McClellan in changing some of the family life curriculum, talking about boundaries and personal space, and consent. And, you know, and just kind of updating the family life curriculum, I know that was important to do and something that needed to be done. I know that Delegate Bell, Delegate Toscano, there are always bills out there that work with domestic abuse, that work with sexual assault. But as far as the hashtag MeToo movement, I think that they always carry bills every year, regardless of this movement.
All right. We will take our next break and be back with Sherry Owen, Community Outreach Director from Sarah. Hang tight. And we're back here with Sherry Owen. We keep talking while we're taking our break. That's the fun part. I don't know. I feel like we should have things streaming so you can hear what we talk about. So back with Sherry. Sherry, one of the things when I'm doing my homework, I often find some weird things. Some of them really disturbing. I found this. U.S. Congress has a requirement that federal government staffers go through months of, quote, cooling off before being allowed to file a complaint against a congressperson. In case there's a sexual assault or harassment file that they want to, you know, something they want to file.
Boy, that's and that's interesting. I don't know that I've heard that before. I just think that's really interesting because I don't know that anybody should have the opportunity to cool off. They should, you know, sexual abuse and sexual harassment happens. It's an issue and it's a problem and it needs to be handled and handled when the person wants to make that report.
There are certainly numerous businesses. Let me phrase this properly. I discovered that one of the reasons that a lot of people don't file sexual assault complaints is because there are a lot of times the person who files is the one who gets fired.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
When a person is accused of sexual harassment, the reaction should be the presumption that the less powerful accuser is likely telling the truth because the risks of going public are great.
So let's talk about this for a second, Rick. If somebody works in an office, all right, and they are an employee and the employer is the harasser, okay? Let's just look at that for a second. And so the employee files a complaint with HR, which is exactly what should happen because every office, every business should have a particular policy and a way to report if that said happens. The employer needs to do their due diligence and they need to talk evenly with both parties involved. I mean, they do their due diligence. That's what should happen before they make any action at all. And that's what I'm seeing happening locally when we work with these businesses and these employers in working with the HR department, because that's the first thing I do before I go into any places. I say, may I see your policy? Because I want to make sure they have a policy, but I want to see it and I want to read it because during the presentation, I can talk about it and, to make it adaptable to the situation in the group that I'm talking to. But they need to do their due diligence and talk with both parties involved rather than just make a quick decision and fire whomever, if that's what I'm hearing you read.
I read this, is that the Me Too movement is that the focus is on the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
And that the need, the focus, let me make sure I'm finding my notes properly, is that the need focus should be to help the current and future sufferers.
Okay. So that's basically doing your due diligence and making sure that one of the things that we find when you work with survivors of any type of abuse is that they don't feel like they're believed. And they don't feel validated. And so I think when you're talking about future sufferers, I think that what it's saying is you need to take everything that you hear and you need to believe it until you find information that tells you otherwise.
Yes.
Yes.
True.
True. So when anybody that walks through our door, we believe them. When we go to, when we accompany survivors to the hospital as an advocate and their support, we listen to them and we believe them. Again, validating, empowering. We believe them because so many survivors feel like they're not believed and they're not taken seriously and they're not worth it. And they did something wrong and they did something to make the person do it. You know, they all of these myths and these, you know, we just need to really get rid of these myths surrounding rape and sexual assault. Because everybody has the right to be heard and everybody has the right to be empowered and everybody has the right to be believed. You know, it's like our judicial system. You're innocent until you're proven guilty. Everybody has the right to be believed when they come forward.
And that's, and again, I don't want to not believe someone of sexual assault or sexual harassment. But that's often the argument from the other side is, why aren't you believing me when I say I didn't do it?
Which is what I said a few minutes ago, then you need to do your due diligence and you need to make sure that you investigate both sides of the story completely, 100%. That's fair. That's fair. That's not putting one over the other. That's fair.
And the Sexual Assault Resource Agency, but the Sexual Assault Resource Agency is not in the middle to do that. You're mm-hmm. just representing. No. You're just representing the one,
right.
The individual who came to you.
We are representing the survivors. That's correct. We don't okay. work with offenders. There are other agencies in the area that will work with offenders. You know, one of the things that we started doing, which I really appreciate, we hired one of my new staff members, and he's actually been around in the agency now a couple of years. And I say new because it's a new position. He's the outreach advocate. And so as an outreach advocate, he goes out to places that can't come to us because we have an office. We're open 9 to 5. And so we see clients daily in our office during office hours. But he works with incarcerated individuals because statistics and show that people who are incarcerated, a large number of them have had past trauma in their background. And so he works very closely with clients at the jail. We're working with clients at the Fluvanna Correctional Women's Center in Fluvanna, with the Blue Ridge Detention Center. You know, we're working with incarcerated non-offenders. So they can't be in detention as a perpetrator, right? So they are there, but they have a past history of trauma in their life. And so it's really been interesting to see the resource that we're offering to these men and these women. We're doing a fatherhood group in the jail for men. It's been amazing to work with them, and they're just so thankful. You know, I say that on Father's Day. It's just been a really an amazing benefit, and it working with the jail has just been wonderful. So that's one of the things that we are doing is trying to get out and looking at all of these underserved populations that we can actually go in and work with and give resources, something that they've never had before.
Now, I have a friend who her personality is very, I mean, she's one of these people who's very upbeat. She laughs all the time, and she's somebody who has her natural style is to give a compliment to everybody. When she sees you, it's, you look great in that. She was recently told that that was offensive. That was, she was given a letter as though that was being sexually harassed. And her reply was, as you're shaking, you're nodding your head. You know where this is going.
I know where this is going. Because I hear it. I did a... I'm going to back up. So I did an in-service a couple of weeks ago. And how I start, I ask everybody in the room to raise their hand if they grew up in the South, you know, below the Mason-Dixie line. And a large number of people will raise their hand. I raise my hand. I not only was raised in the South, I also was raised in a very demonstrative Italian family. Okay. So I'm a hugger. I hug. And what this movement has done is it's made everybody sit back and think. And a lot of people are upset about that because here I am, the hugger. I have to actually stop and think. And I had to retrain my whole brain to say, I can't just go up and hug anybody anymore. I have to be careful. I have to ask permission. Okay? Is it okay if I give you a hug? And so I'm learning to do that, and I'm being very aware about that, and I'm telling people that. Now, you may work in an environment where the people that you work with, you have this unspoken agreement or this spoken agreement that says, I don't mind you putting your arm around me and I don't mind you giving me a hug, that you're comfortable with that. But it has to be a two-way street. It cannot be me just automatically thinking I can go up and hug somebody or put my arm around them. So I've had to really rethink that myself, and that's what I'm trying to convey to people that I'm talking with. It's not that we're saying you can't. You just have to think and ask and be respectful of the other person. I also talk about when you're sitting at a desk, pretty much like I'm sitting at right here, and if I'm looking and I'm working on something and so I have a question, the person that I ask to come over to answer that question shouldn't lean over me. You know, you need to, again, respect personal space and personal boundaries. And I tell everybody to think that you're standing in the middle of a hula hoop and there's your personal space that you have to have for everybody. Okay. Again, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, that is not the way I'd be thinking. But today, it is the way I'm thinking. So when I see somebody that looks really good, I have to think twice about how they're going to receive that information as opposed to offending them. And so I may start by saying, I don't want to offend you, but I just want to let you know that really looks nice on you, you know? So, and people, if they're hearing this right now, they're shaking their head. They're going, really?
But I can't even give you a compliment.
I can't even give you a compliment. I can't even give you a hug, but that's, you know, you need to, in the workplace, you need to be careful, and out in social situations, you just need to be very careful. When I'm talking to people or I'm working in a group, if I'm doing a group exercise, I will ask the person next to me if I need to can I use you as an example? Do you mind if I put my hand on your shoulder? I was in an in-service last week and it got, we got personal, you know, and talking about certain things that having to do with the in-service. But again, everybody asked, do you mind if I give you a hug? Can I give you a hug? Is that okay? Again, you need to just ask, because that is what's going to save a lot of heartache and potential hurt feelings or people feeling threatened or something like that. Again, I know that that's tough to hear sometimes, but it is for me too.
Sarah does prevention work. We touched on it. You do programs. You've mentioned those several times at businesses.
Right. And we have support groups. All of our support groups are free. We've got wonderful support groups. Go to our website and see about all the support groups that we've got coming up.
Just a few minutes left in the show. Again, the hotline 977-7273. That's 434-7273. 434-977-7273. The website is sarahseville.org.
You know, Rick, we're also on social media. We have a Facebook page. We've got an Instagram page. We've got a Twitter page. And a lot of this stuff is put out regularly online through social media. And again, social media has exploded in the last few years. And it's just a really good way to get information out very quickly to people.
When you do the prevention and you go to the schools, do you ever have parents give you feedback, whether it's you're talking about assault or touching or just behavior, somebody say, you know, those kids aren't ready for that, those words, that topic?
That's a great question. A lot, everything that we do in the schools is age appropriate. For the particular...
You may think that.
But, you know, the school has certain health curriculums. The school has certain things that they abide by depending upon the age.
So you're matching up to what they're already teaching.
And again, for the health classes that we're teaching and that we're working with, all parents have the opt-out on anything that they want to. So we work closely with the administrators, and we make very sure that everything is age-appropriate. And again, the parents have the opportunity to opt out. But, when you're talking about, especially starting in fifth grade, which we start fifth grade up through high school, a lot of what we're talking about is bystander intervention and how to be a good bystander and how to see something that's inappropriate and what to do about it when you see it. By the time you get to high school and even, it's almost too late, even definitely by college, but we want to start as early as we can, having these kids just be aware of what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. Our prevention program is just really a top-notch program.
And not that people shouldn't ever listen to any other station other than the one that they're on now, but you do a show.
We've been very fortunate to work with Monticello Media, and so we do Joe Thomas in the Morning, WCHV, which is 1260 AM and 104.7.
So if you want to like turn the dial and have somebody that's, you know, if you're a friend or a family member and you want to accidentally put the dial on to have somebody that you think might benefit from, you know, listening to you be on the air.
Right. And we talk about this again. We talk about services. We talk about events that are coming up. We talk about things that are happening in the environment, things that are happening in the area. So it's a fun show.
All right.
Rick, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and the time you've given us to talk.
All right. Sherry Owen, Community Outreach Director, Sexual Assault Resource Agency. Again, 434-977-7273. Next week, Professor Carmen Higginbotham, as we talk about the history and mysteries of Disney. How cool is that going to be? Talk to everybody later. Bye.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SevillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC.